Thank you for listening to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. This is real sports talk for the real sports fan. And I definitely appreciate you real sports fans who are listening right now. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do me a huge favor and give this podcast a 5-star rating. That 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That 5-star rating review will definitely be appreciated. If you're listening on any other platform, that could be iHeartRadio, Podomatic, wherever, please share from that platform so that your friends and family can see the podcast, listen to the podcast, love the podcast, subscribe, and then share with their friends and family. I'm trying to get this podcast to the highest levels of podcastivity, and I need your help to get there. It'd be truly, truly appreciated. This is a big time episode. As you guys know, if you are a fan of the podcast, whenever a season ends, NFL or NBA, or it's the end of the year in boxing, I do an award show to give out my awards for that season. So this episode is the Real Deal NBA Awards for 2024. So it's going to be a lot of basketball. But before we get into the basketball, got to talk a little boxing. This weekend, on April 20th, we got a big time match between Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney for a world title at the 140-pound division. Now, there's a lot of things going through my head when it comes to this match. The promotion has been very different because of Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia, people don't know what to make of his antics on social media, if he's truly going through something or if this is all just a deep fake to promote the fight, because people now are going to be tuned in for different reasons. Boxing fans like myself are tuned in because we're like, oh, is he good enough to fight someone on the caliber of Devin Haney? Is Devin Haney good enough to show that he's on the same caliber as Gervonta Tank Davis? Gervonta and Ryan Garcia fought last year and Tank won by 7-round KO. Devin Haney would love to prove that he's on the same level as Tank and say, yo, I'm fighting the best. I was undisputed at 135. I have a world title at 140. Gervonta's fought at 135. He's fought at 140. Let's get it. And this would be a big notch in his belt. If he's more impressive against Ryan Garcia than Tank was, is a huge notch in his belt. And it's a bragging right that he has to say, Gervonta's running. He sees me. He sees what I'm doing. He's running. For Ryan Garcia, he's trying to prove that he belongs in the upper echelon of the Shakur Stevensons and the Teofimo Lopez's, Devin Haney's, Gervonta Davis. And you do have to respect that he's taking on big challenges, because he doesn't have to. That's one thing that was proven when the news came out that Ryan Garcia is getting the bigger part of the split between him and Devin Haney. Devin Haney is the more accomplished boxer. Just mentioned, he was undisputed at 135. He has wins over former champs like George Kambosos, Vasyl Lomachenko, Regis Progre, Jorge Linares. With Ryan Garcia, his biggest wins are over, let me see here, have Oscar Duarte, Javier Fortuna, Luke Campbell, and his biggest fight was a loss to Gervonta Davis. Now with Garcia, he gets a bigger part of the split because he's proven that he can sell tickets and sell pay-per-views with the help of Gervonta Davis. But he's also a huge star on social media. Millions upon millions of followers on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that. He's somebody who jumped on the social media wave early as a boxer in his career, and it's paid off for him. But the fact that he's able to negotiate a bigger part of the split, from the reports he gets 55% and Devin Haney gets 45% of the split. The fact that he gets a bigger part of the split as the challenger going against a former undisputed champion and current world champion when he doesn't have any world titles on his resume kind of irks me. It irks me because the more accomplished boxer should be the one that's the A side. And we as consumers, I'm including everybody in this, even though I'm a diehard boxing fan, the casual fans have too much power. Because boxing fans themselves may illegally stream pay-per-views, not buying tickets to fights. So all the money is coming from the casual fans, and the casual fans know Ryan Garcia. They know Gervonta Davis. They know these big stars. And these big stars, in Garcia's case, hasn't been a world champion at all. And in Tank's case, hasn't fought in a world title match in years, but they're stars. People know them. They're attractions. So they get the bigger part of the pie. And that seems backwards to me. But let's get to the fight itself. Big time matchup, again, between two of the best at 140. Both with a lot to prove. They went 3-3 against each other in the amateur. So this is being tagged as game 7 for all the marbles, right? Now, going into this match, Devin Haney is the favorite and should be. Because as a professional, like I mentioned, he's more accomplished, has a better resume. Ryan Garcia, we know, is talented. Quick hands, has power, but has flaws in his game. Devin Haney, quick hands, very disciplined in the ring. His flaw is lack of power, or it could just be a perceived flaw. Because in his last match against Regis Prograe, it seemed like that power was there. Seems like at 140, even though it's just 5 pounds, 5 pounds makes a huge difference when it comes to cutting weight. Going from 135 to 140 seems to have really unleashed a more intact Devin Haney, who can sit down on his punches better. Against Regis Prograe, you saw that. You saw him still be very quick, still be very fast, while also being able to sit down on his punches and deliver more power on those punches. For Ryan Garcia, against Oscar Duarte, it wasn't the best performance, but he was also trying out some new things. He tried to do the shoulder roll, tried to incorporate that into his defense. It definitely wasn't pretty, but I like the fact that he actually tried it in the fight. Because a lot of times people will work on things, you'll see him working on things in training. This is not just boxing, it's basketball, anything. You're like, oh man, they're killing it, right? Basketball players, some of them are, you know, just synonymous with the summer workouts, where you see them shooting a bunch of jumpers, and then come playtime, they're not really doing that. Same thing happens in boxing. You'll see them working on a bunch of stuff. Then come ring time, time to fight, they don't do it. So I do have to commend him for that. So what are the keys for each fighter going into this fight? Let's start with Ryan Garcia. For Ryan Garcia, he cannot let Devin Haney control the pace with his jab. Devin Haney has a great jab. And we've seen him control fights with that punch. Against George Kambosos, the first fight, he literally won it with just a jab. He could have done more. He could be a bit risk averse. But he doesn't have to take crazy chances because he knows what he can do by staying at distance. Now, there's only a 1-inch reach difference between these guys. Devin Haney has that advantage, but it's not the normal reach advantage he has in most fights. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But he does know how to utilize his reach more than Ryan Garcia does. Ryan Garcia isn't a big jab guy, right? If he's throwing that left hand, he wants to hit you with that left hook. Now, of course, he throws a jab, but that's not his strength the way it is for Devin Haney. So first thing is, he cannot let Haney just control the fight in that way. He has to counter the jab. So a big part of not letting Haney control with the jab is to counter. He can counter with a right hand over the top. He can counter with his own jab or even with the hook if he's close enough. Now with Devin Haney, he's going to be very aware of that hook, so he's not going to be close enough for him to counter with it. But you can see Ryan Garcia maybe get an opportunity to counter that left hook. He definitely, even if he just throws it a few times, just to make Candy think about it, would be major. So counter with the straight right, counter by going to a jab to the body or the left hook. You have to crowd Haney in an effective manner. Get close to him. Make it a fight where you guys are fighting in a phone booth at times. But be disciplined when doing that. Against Tank, he had opportunities where he made it uncomfortable for Tank, but he was undisciplined. Second round, got close to Tank, hit him a couple times, got too excited, got undisciplined, got in the wrong position. Tank caught him with a nasty left hand. You have to be disciplined against, even though it's Haney, doesn't have that power of Tank, again, you don't want to get caught anything nasty against him. So three keys for him: don't let Haney control the pace of the jab, counter the jab, and make sure that he knows something's coming back to where he's not just comfortable with it. Crowd in an effective manner, and also throw the left hook, but make sure the right hand is also there. Don't fall in love with the hook. Now the keys for Haney: keep Garcia on his toes with that jab. Throw the jab up, down, different pace, double it up, triple it up sometimes. Make Garcia think about that jab constantly, to where Garcia's on the defensive and not thinking about his offense. Body work. Garcia stands straight up when he fights, so the body's open. Probably one of the reasons he's working on that shoulder roll is to work on a better defense for his body. And we've seen him go down against Tank because of a body shot. So he has to make sure that he's comfortable in that range, get to the body, and make Garcia uncomfortable by doing that. If Garcia tries to crowd, like I mentioned earlier that he should do, tries to crowd you and tries to smother your offense, go to the body. 3, don't let him off the hook. So with Haney, he can be risk averse at times where you feel like he has the opportunity to finish off his opponent and he doesn't do so because he's nervous about going all the way in and getting caught with something. Which makes sense. You don't want to get over aggressive. We've seen it in boxing where one moment seems like this guy has the advantage and then boom, it all switches at the snap of a finger because that person was too aggressive and got caught with something. So I totally get that. But Haney has the ability to be aggressive, to go for the finish without being over aggressive. I think that's something he should do in this fight. So after going over those keys, who do I have winning and how? I think it's going to be a good fight, but I think Haney is technically superior to Ryan Garcia. I do think the hand speed of Garcia and power of Garcia will make Haney, you know, just a little cautious at the beginning, but then Haney will start to take control, and I have Haney winning by knockout in the 10th round. I know Haney isn't known for his knockouts, but right now his record is 31-0 with 15 KOs. It's not something major right there. It's not a major percentage. But again, in that last fight against Regis Prograis, who's a very good fighter, 2-time world champion, he made it look easy. He was able to control and hurt Prograis. I think he could do the same thing Garcia. Garcia will have his moments where he looks good. But I got Haney winning 10th round KO. And if you're a betting man, Haney by KO is a really good bet. So go ahead and take that, all right? So we're going to go ahead and take our first music break. Then we're going to get into the NBA awards. I woke up this morning in the 2000s, early 2000s, rock and roll type of mood. So that's the songs we're playing. And I know some people are very exclusive to hip-hop and R&B for what they listen to. But a lot of these songs you're going to recognize, especially if you're the same age as me, from like either video games or wrestling back in the day or even a movie. You're going to recognize some of these songs. So go ahead and enjoy it. We'll be right back. Talking basketball. Doom, doom, doom. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I saw myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open just to fail. Drunk and but I gotta move on with my own life. I can't help you fix yourself, but at least I can say I tried. I'm sorry, but I gotta move on with my own life.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now let's get into the 2024 Real Deal NBA Awards. And let's start with Rookie of the Year. The nominees are, drum roll please. Thank you for the ghetto drum roll. Nominees are Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, and Brandon Miller. So let's look at Victor Wembanyama first. 21.4 points per game, 10.6 rebounds per game, leading the NBA with 3.6 blocks per game, shooting 46% from the field and 32% from three, and that three-point percentage has gone up in a major way over the second half of the season. You got Chet Holmgren playing for the one seed Oklahoma City Thunder, averaging 16.6 points per game, 7.9 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 2.3 blocks per game, while also being very efficient from the field. Brandon Miller, playing for the Charlotte Hornets, who weren't that good this year, along with the Spurs, but he averaged 17.3 points per game, shot 44% from the field and 37% from three. So the winner for Rookie of the Year is Victor Wembanyama. Each year I send out these gold-plated awards to the players, but it's an NDA that you got to sign that you can't show it. So you just got to take my word for it that this really is 24-karat gold-plated awards being sent out. And the players just can't show you the awards, but take my word for it, all right? So now let's go to Coach of the Year, right? Before we go to Coach of the Year, Victor Wembanyama has been amazing. He lived up to and exceeded all the hype. You got to give him all the credit in the world for that because he came in with all the hype. And at the beginning of the year, I picked Chet Holmgren for Rookie of the Year because I thought that with him playing on a better team, and the team exceeded expectations with Chet Holmgren. No one expected him to be the one seed. I thought they might be the 4 or 5 seed this year. I didn't see them being the one seed in the Western Conference. And even with that, Victor's been so special that even on a bad team, you gotta give him Rookie of the Year. Because some of the games he put up, the 5x5 games, 40 points, 20 rebounds, just night after night, especially the second half of the season, he really separated himself from the rest of the rookies. But there's no shade towards Chet Holmgren. He's been amazing, and we're gonna see him in the playoffs, so can't wait to see how he adjusts to whoever they end up against in that first round. And with Brandon Miller, the future is very bright, very bright. You can definitely see the Paul George influence when it comes to Brandon Miller. And he's going to be special. Hopefully Charlotte can build around him. So now let's move on to Coach of the Year. My nominees for Coach of the Year: Tom Thibodeau for the New York Knicks, second seed in the Eastern Conference. Rick Carlisle for the Indiana Pacers, who ended up with the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. Joe Mazzulla for the Boston Celtics, who got the one seed in the East by a mile. They had the one seed wrapped up, it seems like, in February. Like, it was never close. Jamal Mosley for the Orlando Magic, one of the surprise teams this year, ended with the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. And Mark Dagnot from the OKC Thunder, who I just said had the one seed. So the winner is, ghetto drumroll please, the winner is Mark Dagnot for the Oklahoma City Thunder, they exceed the expectations in such a high way. We all expect them to be better from last year, right? Last year, they barely missed the playoffs. We're like, okay, they're going to make the playoffs this year. I can see them being a 4 or 5 seed. But for them to be the 1 seed with such a young team, and for them to be so good as far as their game plan discipline and defensive discipline, even with their lack of size, shows you the impact of coaching. So I think that Mark Degno definitely deserves to be Coach of the Year. And he'll be getting that 24 gold-plated, carat gold-plated award from us. For the next award, Most Improved Player. Nominees are Tyrese Maxey, Scottie Barnes, and Coby White. So let's look at the case for Tyrese Maxey first. Last year, Tyrese Maxey averaged 20.3 points per game and 3.5 assists. This year, he went up to basically 26 points a game and 6.2 assists. Now, his efficiency went down, but he did have a lot more on his shoulders, especially when Embiid was out for all that time. So I'm not going to hold the efficiency against him because he had a bigger role. And then with Embiid out, he was thrust into the number one option of the team during that time, which he definitely seemed like he wasn't ready for that part of it. But who is when you go from number 3 to number 2, then number 1 so quickly? So Tyrese Maxey definitely had a great year and deserves to be in the mentioning for this award. Scottie Barnes. So in the 2022-23 season, Scottie Barnes averaged 15.3 points per game, 6.6 rebounds, 4.8 assists, while shooting 45% from the field and 28% from three. Got to work on that three-point jumper, which he did in the offseason. This year, he went up to 20 points a game, 8.7 rebounds, 6.1 assists per game, shot 47% from the field, 34% from three. Big, big increase in just everything across the board for Scottie Barnes. Made the All-Star team as a replacement player. He definitely deserves some kudos. Coby White for the Chicago Bulls. Last year, he averaged 9.7 points per game, 2.8 assists, 2.9 rebounds, and shot 44% from the field. This year, was thrust into a bigger role, got a lot more opportunities, increased his points by 10, went from 9 to 19, 5.1 assists, 4.6 rebounds, shot 44% from the field. So he kept the same efficiency, even though he went from 8 field goals a game to 15 field goals a game. So to be able to keep your efficiency at the same rate while increasing the volume is very hard to do, especially with defenses knowing you're one of the go-to guys now. So you have to give Coby White a lot of credit for that. So who wins the award for Most Improved Player between Tyrese Maxey, Scottie Barnes, and Coby White? I'm going to go with Coby White. This was a tough one. I went back and forth between Scottie Barnes and Coby White on this one. Scottie Barnes definitely deserves, if some people picked him, I have no issue with that because of his increase in field goal percentage. But with Coby White keeping the same field goal percentage with the increase in volume and the increase of responsibility on the team, gotta love that. So I'm going with Coby White for my Most Improved Player. So now let's talk about Sixth Man of the Year. The nominees are Malik Monk, Naz Reid, Bogdan Bogdanović, Norman Powell, and Bobby Portis. So for Malik Monk, now he's out for the rest of the season, won't play in the playoffs most likely, or play in, depending on what the Kings do. But he was major for them this year. 15.4 points per game, 5.1 assists, shot 44% from the field, 35% from three. Naz Reid for the 3-seed Minnesota Timberwolves, 13.5 points per game, 5.2 rebounds, shot 47% from the field, 41% from three. That's major. He's coming off the bench giving you major production, major efficiency, and when he had to step in as a starter when Karl-Anthony Towns went out, did it with no issues, and they had a winning record during that time. Bogdan Bogdanovic for Atlanta. Now, Atlanta wasn't good. They'll be in probably the most, or I should say the least, thought about playing game between them and the Chicago Bulls. But he was a major part of why Atlanta is even in the play-in, period. 16.9 points per game, 3.2 assists per game, 3.4 rebounds per game, shot 42% from the field, 37% from three. Norman Powell for the Clippers, 14 points a game, shot 48% from the field, 43% from three. He's somebody who they truly depend on when it comes to his scoring. And he's a big part of why that team was successful this year and why they'll have home court advantage in the first round against Dallas. Bobby Portis. Now, Milwaukee is a three seed. They're going to play against the Pacers in the first round. And even as a three seed, they've been disappointing, right? They were 30-13, fired their coach, got Doc Rivers, and haven't been as good. Now, defensively, they improved. That was the big thing. Early in the season, they were horrible defensively. They're still not the best defensively. That series against the Pacers is going to be very, very interesting. But I can see Bobby Portis' impact in a major way on this team. They're not the 3 seed without him. 13.7 points per game, 7.4 rebounds, shot 50% from the field, 40% from three, and had games where he just exploded and carried the offense. I remember watching a game when he played the Suns. He had 25 in the first half. His impact was definitely major. And also when it comes to just his energy, he brings a different energy to that team that they need. So who is the winner for Sixth Man of the Year? Ghetto drum roll, please. The winner is Malik Monk. Yes, I went with Malik Monk. This was a tough one because you could go with Naz Reid because of his impact on winning. It could go at Bogdan Bogdanovic being the most productive. Norman Powell for his consistency. All the stuff I mentioned about Bobby Portis. But Malik Monk, the Kings are not going into the play-in with home court against the Warriors without what he did this year. And it's a shame that he's no longer going to be available for them. But he had a major impact on what they did. So let me give you my winners for the first four awards. Rookie of the Year, Victor Wembanyama. Coach of the Year, Mark Dagnault. Most Improved Player, I went with Kobe White. And Sixth Man of the Year, Malik Monk. So before we get on to some other awards like Defensive Player of the Year, MVP, All-NBA, we're going to take our next music break and be right back.
Leading you down into my core.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now, let's talk about the main awards. Defensive Player of the Year, MVP, All-NBA. So my nominees for Defensive Player of the Year: Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama, and Herb Jones. So let's look at the case for Rudy Gobert. 13 rebounds a game. That's a big part of defense. 2.1 blocks per game. The Minnesota Timberwolves finished the year first in defensive rating and only allowed 106.3 points per game. Now, this was prior to their game against the Suns in the last game of the season. So they were first in defensive rating and first in points allowed per game. Now, that's a team defensive thing, right? But he does have a huge impact on that. Understand they have Jay McDaniels and Anthony Edwards. Karl Anthony Towns has been better on defense this year. Naz Reid. They have players off the bench who can play defense. But it doesn't work without the anchor. So Rudy Gobert deserves a lot of credit for that. Next nominee, Victor Wembanyama. 3.6 blocks per game. 10.6 rebounds per game, right? And you have the on-off numbers with him. As a team, defensively, the Spurs are trash. But when he was on the floor, they were a lot better. They were among the best in the NBA. When he was off the floor, they were the worst. And a lot of people say you can't blame him for that. You can't. But what you can say is he wasn't this level of defender all year. It took him a while to get going defensively. Joel Embiid dropped 70 on his head. So do you hold that against him when you look at somebody like Rudy Gobert, who was on the same level all year? It was an interesting discussion, interesting viewpoint on that one. Third nominee, Herb Jones for the New Orleans Pelicans, who finished with the 7th seed and will play against the LA Lakers on Tuesday to try to determine who gets that 7th spot in the playoffs. The Pelicans finished 7th in defensive rating, 8th in points per game allowed. And when you watch them play, the impact that Herb Jones has doesn't show up in just the raw numbers, right? He's not going to get two blocks a game or 2+ blocks a game. He's not going to get 2+ steals a game, right? But when he does get a block, it's major. The amount of shots that he does alter is major. The amount of times where teams are not able to get in their offense because he's guarding their best player and making them work into deep into the shot clock, that matters. Especially when you consider the players he's playing with. CJ McCollum's not considered a good defender. Brandon Ingram, average defender. Zion has improved a lot this year. That's one of the big things about his game that has improved, but he's still not considered a good defender. Jonas Valanciunas at times doesn't play as much because he's so bad defensively. So you look at it that way. The best defenders outside of Herb Jones come off the bench for the Pelicans. We talk about Dyson Daniels and Jose Alvarado, Najee Marshall, Larry Nance. They're part of the bench unit. So with Herb Jones and that offense and that starting lineup, being able to be good defensively, that's all on the shoulders of Herb Jones. And that definitely should matter. So the winner for Defensive Player of the Year, ghetto drum roll please. I'm silly, y'all. But Defensive Player of the Year, I'm going with Victor Wembanyama. You look at the amount of blocks, the amount of steals, and the way he impacts just the way teams play. Like watching a few of their games and seeing NBA players look around, over their shoulders to see where he is before they lay the ball up. And the impact he has mentally on the game because of his block shots is major. And I can see him being Defensive Player of the Year. I have no problem with Rudy winning it. I would love Herb Jones to win it, and honestly, I probably didn't pick him because I didn't want to be a homer. But Victor Wembanyama is amazing. So he could be the first. I don't know if he'll be the first rookie to get Defensive Player of the Year. I got to look that up. So now let's get to MVP. MVP this year is hard. It's hard this year because of the 65-game limit that you have to have this major awards. And it went up and down this year. It could be any of the top three that I name, honestly. So at number five on my MVP ballot, I have Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum playing for the best team in the league in Boston, being the best player on that team, giving you 27 points a game, 8.1 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 47% from the field, 37% from three. At four, I got Jalen Brunson. Yes, Jalen Brunson, 28.6 points per game, 6.7 assists per game, shot 48% from the field, 40% from three. Got the Knicks to the 2 seed. This is with Julius Randle missing major time. OG Anunoby being in and out of the lineup. A lot of the offensive load is on his back. And the team is very scrappy, and they play defense, and that's what keeps him in games, but offensively, it's all on him. You have to give him credit for that. That's why I have him number four on my MVP ballot. Number three, I got SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 30.3 points per game, 6.2 assists, 5.6 rebounds, 2 steals. He shot 53% from the floor, 35% from 3, and led OKC to the 1 seed. At 2, I got Nikola Jokic, 26.5 points per game, 12.3 rebounds per game, 9 assists, shot 58% from the floor, 36% from 3, just major. But winning MVP this year, he's going into several seasons as the favorite. I think this is the year he should finally get it. I'm going with Luka Doncic as the MVP. 33.9 points per game, 9.8 assists, 9.2 rebounds. Shot 48% from the field, 38% from three. And the way the Mavs played the second half of the season, you gotta give Luka a lot of respect for that and what he was able to do. So I got Luka as the real deal MVP, and Victor Wembanyama as my Defensive Player of the Year. So now let's go to all NBA. All right, first team NBA. Now you got to remember, NBA, all NBA this year is positionless. So in years past, you'd have two guards, two fours in the center on each team. This year, they were like, nope, positionless. You can pick whoever you want for first, second, and third team. So I went with that. So I got Luka Doncic, of course, SGA, Nikola Jokic, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brunson, first team. Some people say, oh, you're crazy. How can you not have Giannis? Because it's not by positions. It's by the guys who I believe were the best this year. And that's my five. Luka, SGA, Nikola Jokic, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brunson. The way it's set up, whoever you have as your top five MVP candidates should be All-NBA first team. I think it's that simple. For the second team, I got Giannis Antetokounmpo. This year, giving you 30.4 points per game, 11.8 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and shot 61% from the field. And he's still a good defender. It may not show up in team defense, but he's still a good individual defender. The second spot on the second team, went with Anthony Edwards. 26.1 points per game, 5.4 assists, 5.1 assists, shooting 46% from the field and 35% from three, also an excellent defender. For the third spot on the second team, I got Anthony Davis, 24.6 points per game, 12.7 rebounds, shot 55% from the field, and blocked 2.4 blocks per game. Major on both ends. One of the reasons the Lakers look dangerous going into the play-in and possibly the playoffs. At the fourth spot on the second team, I got Kevin Durant. He's been amazing this year. 27.3 points per game, 6.6 rebounds, 5.1 assists. Shot 52% from the floor, 41% from three. The efficiency is just out of this world. And he had a lot of the offensive burden on his back this year as Devin Booker and Bradley Beal missed time. But Devin Booker didn't miss too much time because he was eligible for All-NBA, and I got him as my fifth guy on the second team. 27.1 points per game, 6.9 assists, 4.5 rebounds, shot 49% from the field, 36% from three. And his increase and his improvement as a passer really helped this team in some tough times. And now they're set up to where they're going against a three-seed in Minnesota, and they've had their number all year. You may see some things shake up in the Western Conference because of that. So that's my second team. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Anthony Edwards, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker. Now for the third team. At the first spot, I got LeBron James. 25.6 points per game, 8.2 assists, 7.2 rebounds, shot 54% from the field, 41% from three. Man, that dude is good, man. We'll get to just his impact overall when I preview the playing game against New Orleans Pelicans. For the second spot, I got Kawhi Leonard. 23.7 points per game, still an excellent defender. Not the defender he was in 2017 per se, but still very good. 6.1 rebounds per game, shot 52% from the field, 41% from three. At the third spot on the third team on NBA, I went with somebody who may be a shock to some people on all NBA. But I went Paolo Banchero from the Orlando Magic, 22.5 points per game, 6.9 rebounds, 5.4 assists, and shot 45% from the floor. Was an excellent defender all season. A big part of why Orlando is one of the best defensive teams in the league. And it's going to be a pain in the ass come playoff time, for sure. At the fourth spot on the third team, I got Jaylen Brown. I feel like you got to have two Celtics All-NBA. 23 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 49% from the field, 35% from three, and is an excellent defensive player. Excellent defensive player. Like, taking on the hardest assignment all season. I've seen him do a good job on Zion and then turn around and do a good job on SGA. Like, his versatility has been amazing this year, so he deserves that. And for the last spot, went with Steph Curry. Steph Curry, 26.4 points per game, 5.1 assists, 4.5 rebounds per game, shooting 45% from the floor, 40% from three. Major. Deserves that spot. So here's my recap of my all NBA teams. First team, Luka, SGA, Nikola Jokic, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brunson. Second team, Giannis, Anthony Edwards, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker. Third team, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Paolo Banchero, Jaylen Brown, and Steph Curry. So guys, let me know what you think about my teams. I know that it's tough out here, but let me know who you have as your All-NBA, your MVP, and Defensive Player of the Year, all right? So we're going to take our next music break. When I come back, we preview and play in and playoffs. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now let's get into the Eastern Conference play-in and first round. Let's start with the 7-8 matchup. These games will go on Wednesday night. It's going to be the Eastern Conference. So first game, 76ers Heat. Yo, monster matchup. And each team, they might not say this out loud, but they want that 7th spot because you got the Knicks at 2. You don't want to play Boston. And Boston don't want to play y'all. So either way, both teams are like, man, let me try to get out of this, win this game, get that 7th spot. You can play the Knicks. The Knicks are tough. Not an easy walk in the park, but they're not Boston at 8. And with Joel Embiid, hopefully he's good to go. Going against his Miami team. Miami's been super inconsistent all year. Jimmy Butler, we know what he can do. Come play in playoff time. Last year we saw them lose the first play-in game. Damn near lose the second one. Get the A spot and then go all the way to the finals. I don't see that happening this year. The 76ers, Joel Embiid, when he's played, even since he's been back, even though he's not putting up the same monster numbers he was putting up pre-injury, that team is just so different with him playing on both ends. It just sets everything in motion, puts everything in the right spot for them. And Miami's going to come with a defensive strategy, but Nick Nurse has done a good job of making sure that Joel Embiid gets the ball in spots where he's not going to be in bad doubles. Joel Embiid has also done a better job of playmaking out of double teams. Miami's going to try to do that zone. But 76ers got shooters around Joel Embiid, like Maxey, Tobias Harris, Buddy Hield, who they added. So I like the 76ers to win this game. I think they got too much firepower for Miami. So I like them to win this one. Good game. I'm going to say 115 to 110 Philadelphia in that first play-in game for the East. Bulls, Hawks. I don't truly believe in either of these teams to beat the loser of the 7-8 matchup. We got the Bulls winning. The Bulls have been scrappy all year. They played really well against the Knicks. That was a really good game for the last game of the regular season. Got the Bulls winning. I just don't see the Hawks having enough. And this one, Hawks are currently on a 6-game losing streak. That's how they ended the season. So I think they're ready to go ahead and go 1-2-3 Cancun. Call it a day. So I got the Bulls winning. And then that means in the matchup for the 8th spot, you got the Heat versus the Bulls. Now, of course, if you're the Celtics, you're probably rooting for the Bulls or Hawks to come through. But I got the Heat winning that matchup. So my 7th spot, I got Philadelphia. In the 8th spot, I got the Miami Heat. So let's go to the locked-in playoff series that we have for the Eastern Conference. First, we have Pacers versus Bucks. Now, some people believe that the Bucks purposely avoided the Philadelphia 76ers or Miami Heat in that 7th spot to take on the Pacers. But the Pacers gave them hell during the regular season. They played 5 times. Pacers won 4 out of the 5 matchups. And with the way that Milwaukee struggled to get back on defense for a large portion of the season, that's why Indiana was able to take advantage. Now, in the playoffs, we all know that the game slows down. You're not going to get as many fast break opportunities. Indiana's special when it comes to that. They're getting the ball and they're going. They're going to do that regardless of the situation. But in the playoffs, teams are going to do a better job getting back. They're going to make sure that you don't get as many easy buckets. Damian Lillard's been here. Giannis Antetokounmpo, if he's healthy enough, he's been here. He's done this. Chris Middleton, he's been here. He's done this. On Indiana, Pascal Siakam, he's been a part of a team that's done it. Outside of that, not much playoff experience. Outside of Pascal Siakam, who was important on that Toronto team, but wasn't the guy. We know Kawhi was the guy. Is Tyrese Haliburton ready for this moment? Has it been the same second half of the season? I think this is a good series. I'm going to go Bucks in six. Because if Giannis is healthy, this is if Giannis is healthy. If Giannis is not healthy, all bids are off. But with the Pacers not being the best defensively, with it being the playoffs where they just have those experienced players and Damian Lillard, you know, who could come through in the clutch moments. Chris Middleton could come through in clutch moments. I don't know if the Pacers in a slow down form, having to execute in the half court, can out execute the Bucks. They are well coached. Rick Carlisle is a really good coach. Doc Rivers can be questionable at times, especially in the playoffs. So that's why I think it's going to be close, but I'm going Bucks in six. And if Giannis is healthy, Giannis is the difference. The next series is very interesting. We got the Cleveland Cavaliers against the Orlando Magic. They split the season series 2-2. This is going to be a defensive series, just dogfight. I think that Paolo Banchero and Donovan Mitchell are going to be the key players, of course. And with Orlando, they have so many pieces that they can throw out there to try to guard Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, of course, is that weapon that they need. They need Garland to be that guy for them, right? Do they go to a lineup where they have Evan Mobley come off the bench, or Evan Mobley not in the closing lineups? Or is it Jared Allen not in the closing lineups? They're probably going to have one of those two guys have less minutes. But it's going to be such a dogfight defensively, they might want to keep both those guys out there. There's going to be a lot of inside scoring. So does the three-point shooting of Strus and George Niang and others on Cleveland give them the advantage? Now, last season in the playoffs, they went against a tough team in the New York Knicks. Very tough, very physical, very similar to this Orlando Magic team. Now, the Magic don't have as dynamic of a scorer as Jalen Brunson. Paolo Banchero can be that, but he's just not on that level yet where you're like, man, he's the dude who can carry us in the series. Now, maybe this is when he proves it. It's going to be very, very interesting. Whew, this is a tough one. But I like the Magic. I like the Magic in this one. I made a video a few weeks back where I said, don't be surprised if it's the second round and it's Magic Celtics 2-2. So I got to go with the Magic in this one in seven. Magic in seven. Now, if the play-in plays out like I think it will, where you have the Celtics versus the Heat, I'm going Celtics in five. If it's 76ers versus Knicks, I gotta go to 76ers. If you have a healthy Joel Embiid, it's too much firepower for the Knicks. The Knicks are gonna make it tough. I'll go 76ers in six in that one. That's if the play-in, you know, plays out like I think it's going to play out. But that was my Eastern Conference preview. We're going to take our last music break, do the Western Conference.
I won't take it for granted. I won't take it for granted. I said I learned from my mistakes.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now let's talk Western Conference. And let's start with the play-in games. First play-in game of the tournament, Tuesday night, is Lakers at Pelicans. The Lakers have had the Pelicans number this year, winning 3 out of 4 matchups, and winning their 3 matchups pretty handily, right? 3 times they won. First one was 133-89, blowout. I believe that was in a play-in tournament. On the second game, the Pelicans won 129-109. Third matchup, the Lakers won 139-122. And then on the last game of the regular season on Sunday, the Lakers won pretty easily, 124-108. Now, the size of the Lakers seems to give the Pelicans issues. And that's something that you just have to hit your outside shots. CJ McCollum, Trey Murphy, Herb Jones. Herb Jones seems like he was the only one that showed up yesterday for them. They have to hit their outside shots. Zion has to be smart about when he goes inside, not force it to the left. And when he does go inside, if he's able to force help, make the smart pass. Defensively, LeBron James carved him up with assists. You know, just able to find an open man. If he ran a pick and roll, he found Anthony Davis. If they were in zone, Uchiha Hachimura was able to, I don't know how many back doors he got, but he was able to get so many backdoor cuts and dunks by LeBron just sitting there and finding him on backdoor cuts. So defensively, the Pelicans have to do a better job of when LeBron has the ball, just make sure that they stay home. And if they double smartly. Of course, you want to give them different looks. But I would rather LeBron go for 35-40 instead of having 15 assists. So I'll put Herb Jones on him. If I was a coach, put Herb Jones on him. Double from time to time. But make it to the point where if you're doubling, it's because he's on a baseline and you're cutting off all the cutting routes to the goal. He's got to throw a cross-court pass to where you can rotate and recover. Some of that aspect, right? For the Lakers, you just got to continue doing what they do. Make it hard for Zion inside. Just muck up the space with their size. And that's how they've been able to really hold the Pelicans up all year. Another thing that's funny about the Pelicans is the Pelicans had the best road record in the NBA this year, 28-14. I don't know what they need to do at home. If they have to act like it's a road game, like go into a hotel the night before, like treat it like a road game. Maybe that's what it is. They got to do their thing. I think the Pelicans can pull it off. But of course, I'm being biased. But it's tough to beat a team back-to-back. And that's what the Lakers have been doing this one, especially back-to-back at home. So I think the Pelicans can pull it off. I think it's going to be a great game. And the Pelicans, they've shown an ability to bounce back from bad performances. And that was a bad performance on Sunday from them. So I'm going to Pelicans in this one. 115-113. I think it's a close game that they pull out at the end. Pelicans, they can't go far behind. They got to start off fast. And hopefully they find a way to do that. So I think the Pelicans win that game. And for their reward, they'll get the Denver Nuggets in the first round. For the 9-10 matchup, got Kings, Warriors. They split their season series 2 games apiece. The Kings just don't have enough. No Malik Monk, no Herder. And even though the Warriors are small, the Kings are also small. So the lack of size from the Warriors doesn't affect them in this one. I think Steph Curry is going to go off. I think it's a good game. Give me Warriors 125-120. Then that means we'll get Lakers-Warriors, which it will be great. Or Lakers-Kings, excuse me. Or Lakers-Warriors, I'm right. Lakers-Warriors for that 8 matchup. And that's something that the NBA would love and hate at the same time, because that means that one of the Lakers or Warriors is not going to make the playoffs. And I'm going to go with the Lakers in that matchup. I think the Warriors missed the playoffs. So that means it'll be Lakers, OKC, and it'll be Pelicans, against the Denver Nuggets. So let's look at the locked-in matchups in the Western Conference. We got Mavericks against the Clippers. The Clippers won a season series 2-1. Are they healthy? Are they going to be fully ready to go come playoff time? I think this week off definitely helps them a lot, like a lot. But the Mavericks on a different level right now. With Luka, with the size that they added, with Gafford, PJ Washington, Kyrie Irving's been balling this year, Dante Exum. They're doing good things. Do you go against Kawhi in the playoffs? I think this is the year that Luka is able to take out the Clippers. Clippers have not shown me much the second half of the season. They looked like they were unbeatable for a period there. And then something happened. They lost their identity. I think the Mavericks have found theirs at the right time. Going Mavericks in six over the Clippers. 3-6 matchup. We got the Timberwolves hosting the Suns. This is the perfect matchup for Phoenix. They have the Timberwolves number. They beat them all three times this year. All three times pretty easily. I just think the dynamic of their offense is not the one that is built for the Timberwolves to beat. Give me Suns in six. And if the play-in plays out like I think it will, 1-8 matchup, OKC Lakers. Give me OKC in seven. I think it's going to be a classic first-round series. OKC outlasts the Lakers. And 2-7 matchup. As much as I would love to see my Pelicans could pull off the upset, I don't think so. Give me Denver in six. All right. So that was my Western Conference play-in slash playoff preview. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Some boxing, a lot of basketball. And next week I'll be coming back with my reactions to game one from each series, giving you my detailed breakdowns and whatnot. Can't wait for that. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you share it with your friends and family. I would truly appreciate it. Follow me at The Real Deal WDA on all social media platforms. I'm trying to drop content every day, so make sure you check it out. And until next time, go real or go home.